thing. I'm going to ask you some questions, and the tape will be transcribed.
Yes.
It goes into the archives of the University of Pennsylvania Center for History of Chemistry, but what you will have complete control over the transcript. In other words, we'll have it transcribed and send you the transcript.
Yes.
And then you can make all the changes and whatever.
I shall not make many changes.
Not many changes. Well, that's good. But
if I find very bad errors.
Yeah, sometimes, yes. And now let's see if your voice carries enough and if I have that adjusted well enough. Could you say a few words, maybe?
Something more than I said before?
Well, no, I guess it's all right. We'll just listen to it now. This is Tonya Koppel interviewing Professor Thaddäus Reichstein at his home in Basel, Switzerland on April 22, 1905. Professor Reichstein, if you don't mind, I would like to ask you a few questions about your life first and your early life. You were born in 1897 in, I hope I pronounced this right,
Wrocław
in Poland.
Yes.
And in 1905, when you were 8 years old, your parents emigrated to Germany?
No, my parents emigrated to Switzerland. It's to say that my father had his business in Kiev, in Russia.
Yes.
And the family went to Poland where the parents of my mother and my father came from for summer holiday to Poland on the country.
I see.
And I was born there.
I see.
And then when I was in 1905, they immigrated to Switzerland. But the family was too big, and so they left me in Germany in a school for 2 years. Until he could buy a house in Zurich, and then I could come also.
So you were in Jena?
In Jena,
in Germany?
Yes,
in a boarding school?
Yes, 2 years.
What grades did you go through?
No grades.
No grades?
When I was there, I was seven years old.
Yes, and you didn't go to, didn't have any formal schooling yet?
No. That's just a primary school.
Yeah, but you went primary school grade 1, 2, 3. No, it was okay. Just.
There were no.
But you did get some schooling in Germany.
Yes.
I see.
For these 2 years.
For 2 years.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it. Why did you not like it?
No, it was kind of military attitude and. Mm-hmm. Which was completely foreign to me. I did like 2-3 boys who were also there, but that's all. I didn't like the teachers, and I didn't like the other boys.
So you were glad to go to Switzerland?
Yes, very glad, yes.
You went to Switzerland in 1908, to Zurich?
To
1907.
I joined the family in Zurich.
In Zurich?
My father just bought a house there.
Yeah, well, your father had his own office in Kiev.
In Kiev, or, yes.
And then
he lived about a quarter of a year in Zurich, and a quarter of a year he went to Kiev.
Oh, I see.
After his businesses.
So he was a chemical engineer, was he?
Yes, yes.
What was his name?
Reichstein.
Yes, but his first
name. Isidor
Reichstein. I see. And so he continued his business in Zurich.
Till the war.
Yeah. What did he do?
He made equipment for sugar industry.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's interesting.
There was sugar industry in this part of Russia, very much, and factories who produce sugar from the beetle, from sugar beetle. And he made the machine. He sold the machines and I didn't know exactly what I was too small and this time. I haven't seen. He had just an office in Kiev.
Mm-hmm.
He made most things by correspondence, and he went to the factories.
I see that your early work was connected with sugars. Was there any influence?
No.
It has nothing to do with your father's business. But your father, being a chemist, must have had a certain influence on your decision study chemistry?
No.
Not either?
No. That was quite chance. Until I think you had to decide when you enter the ETH Zurich, which department you would. I wanted to be engineer.
Yes.
And only 3 days ago, before I had to decide the final decision, the best friend in my class, he said he is going to study chemistry. And then I suddenly thought, I had never thought about to study chemistry, because I didn't think that it's something really worse to study, because I knew chemistry quite well. I did a lot of chemistry on my own in the cellar in our house. I made analysis and all kind of experiments. And when I started studying, I knew much more than all the rest.
Oh, yes.
Just by practice.
Yes, you were self-taught in a way.
By practicing.
But
and then afterwards I liked it.
You liked it.
And we had a very good teacher in the school in Zurich for chemistry. And he also influenced many of the boys to study chemistry afterwards.
What was the name of that school?
At this time it was called Industrieschule.
Uh-huh.
Now it's called Oberrealschule. That's just the type of gymnasium without Latin.
Yes, it's
didn't
more
like old languages of this time. Afterwards I was sorry we didn't learn any Latin. But
it's more mathematically oriented.
More mathematics and physics and natural science and all this. And I was always was very easy for me.
Mm-hmm. And before you went to the Oberrealschule, you had some schooling here, but mainly private schooling.
Private at home. At home.
I see. And were your parents involved in this?
My father gave us mathematics.
Uh-huh. And your
and
mother? Did
no,
she?
No, she
no,
didn't.
She did not.
But no, also a real teacher. He gave some lessons in German, and we learned French, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember how, but I had no trouble with French, because one had to speak it, and I had trouble with English, because I didn't learn it, and at this time it was not yet very, very popular here, and the English teacher, he wanted to throw me out of school, but he didn't succeed. Because when I entered the school in the Oberrealschule in Zurich about 2.5 years too late, nearly 3 years too late, and I had to prepare everything myself. And that was quite easy, except for English, because they had already 3 years of English, and I had to learn it on myself within 3 months. I didn't succeed.
That's difficult.
When I entered the school that was in spring 1914. So I realized that I don't understand what he's talking, and he didn't like me and I didn't like him, and he wanted to throw me out of school because of my completely ignorance of English. So I went to the rector and I told him, I know my English is very poor because I had no time to make it, but I will go to England in the summer holidays and will try to learn just conversation. So he agreed, and then he couldn't do anything. And I went to England and stayed there, and when I was there the war broke out.
Yes.
And I couldn't return.
Oh no.
So I had to stay till Christmas.
Uh-huh.
On Christmas suddenly you could pass by France again.
Mm-hmm.
In 14. And so I came back in just for the new year, and my English was not really good, but I could understand the people talking, everything, and I could also talk a little, so this teacher couldn't throw me out anymore.
So he accepted it.
He was not very friendly.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to make nonsense as much as I could to make him angry.
Well, that's boys.
I was on very good terms and with all the other teachers.
Yes.
So they stayed in school like all the others.
But you were a real Swiss by then. I mean,
yes,
coming to this country
Swiss
so early.
Yes, I became Swiss in 1914.
Mm-hmm.
Naturalized.
And you spoke Swiss German?
Yes, we could speak
fluently,
German.
So there was no problem.
No, not much problem.
So
my parents did not become Swiss.
Oh, they did not.
Only for the this.
Oh, I
see.
We are
five boys.
Yes, yes.
And they made the five boys with Swiss nationality, and because my parents said yes, to live half of his time in Russia and half of it here, so it's not, and he cannot speak Swiss German, and
mm-hmm.
But afterwards we were sorry that he didn't make it also, because he was unable to return anymore to Russia.
Yes, I
when
see.
When war
yeah,
broke out and then the revolution came,
mm-hmm. Yes.
Soon, it was quite impossible, and he lost everything.
In Russia.
In Russia, and he had most of his values he had in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So he lost everything, and he couldn't work anymore here, couldn't find any work. So my mother had to lend, rooms in the house.
Oh, yes, let rooms take,
yes,
boarders.
Yes, take boarders.
Yes.
And to earn something, and we had to sell always piece of land.
Oh.
The land was quite big.
Yes, yes.
It was fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And, so they managed to bring it through all five. I was already after the war, when the financial situation was the worst, I could start to earn myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you went.
I had always luck with earning money. I didn't make any jumps, but it came from a loan.
Yes, yes. So you went to the ETH, Swiss Federal Institute of Technology.
Studied chemistry, and at the same time I could find a job in a factory just to work one day.
Uh-huh.
And this one day I earned sufficient for the rest of the week.
Uh-huh.
And to pay my fees from the ETH, mm-hmm. and everything.
And you went into the chemical engineering department.
Yes.
And what did you take? Was the curriculum, was it the same as it is now, or as it used to be?
More or less the same.
More or less.
The same, yes. It was just the first of course mathematics and physics and physical chemistry and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the afternoon we had to work in the laboratory to make analysis and analytical chemistry, and then afterwards these modern things atomic structures, they were not existent yet.
Nobody
knew anything about it. There were some special lectures which I went given by physicists on Bohr's theory, and on that just came up. It was quite new.
Yes, in 1916 you started. So
yes, it was quite new.
And it was taught, brand new.
It was not officially.
You could
go there.
Yes,
but not, it
an,
was
an
not,
elective.
Elective.
We would call it Freifach.
Yes, a very young man. Spoke about this. He's long dead now.
Oh yes. You don't remember his name, or?
Yes, Wolfke.
Wolfke.
Wolfke is the name. He's not very well known.
Mm-hmm.
There were others later who were, of course, much better known in the physics department.
Who were they? Do you remember?
Einstein was one.
Oh, Einstein, of course,
Weyl.
Wolfgang Pauli there?
Wolfgang Pauli, yes, that was much later.
Much later, yes. Yes.
And then came in the physics department, they came the Bay.
Yes.
And when I studied chemistry, the physics department was in an extremely poor state. The male representative, he was mentally ill, and they hadn't the possibility to put him out. They had no successor, and they had to wait until he dies.
What was his name?
Schweitzer. He's completely unknown.
Mm-hmm.
He worked on magnetism, and perhaps his work when he was young was quite good, but he had no facilities to teach, and he was ill, really ill. And afterwards Debye came with Scherrer, and then physics started, and they attracted many good people, among them also Pauli.
Yes.
And also there was also the Picard,
yes,
probably.
The deep sea diver, is that?
The
Babiscaf
hemisphere. Balloons.
Uh huh.
He went up to with his balloons up to 40 kilometers.
Uh huh.
It was the highest point which could be reached at this time. There were no rockets yet.
Mm-hmm.
And,
what was the chemistry department like?
The chemistry department was quite good. My chief was Staudinger, Hermann Staudinger, who worked on polymers. At this time he was the only one who believed that the polymers like proteins and caoutchouc and so are really big molecules held together by coordinated bonds. And others, the general view was that there were just associations of small molecules. That means that the formula of cellulose would be C6 and hold together by some unknown forces, which they called coordination complexes or
yes.
something. And Staudinger, he was quite, eigenwillig.
Mm-hmm. Independent.
He was possessed by idea.
Yes.
And he didn't think on everything else than on his polemos. Uh-huh. And he was right. And I was quite sure that he is right. But I didn't like the methods which he used to repeat on every lecture which he gave officially. He repeated the same things. Mm-hmm. But that was necessary, of course. Mm-hmm. He had to defend his ideas.
Yeah. How did he want to prove it? Experimentally?
He did prove it experimentally. With quite reasonable methods, which even afterwards were accepted by the physicists.
What did he molecular weight determinations?
Molecular weight determinations were impossible, and they don't work on these things for a quite simple reason, because these molecules are not stable. They can move around like a snake.
Mm.
And therefore they behave as if they were smaller parts, smaller bits. But I don't find the correct words for it. He developed quite good methods.
Mm-hmm.
But there were not such methods which the physicists like. And some of the physicists, for instance, the Röntgen diagrams of cellulose, they gave a repetition unit of C12.
Mm-hmm.
So very many of the chemists accepted that as a proof that cellulose is just C12.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a double of
yeah.
glucose.
Yes, yes.
And that was a jump which is not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Cellulose is built of such units, but they are held together by real covalent bonds.
Yes, yes.
And that's what Staudinger mm-hmm. always propagated, mm-hmm. and which turned out finally to be correct. And the physicists admitted that this, but only about 10 or 20 years later, that these lines in the Röntgen diagrams, which give you a unit of C12,
mm-hmm.
means something else.
Mm-hmm.
It is a unit which repeats itself.
Yes, yes.
But these two units are held together by a real covalent bond.
Yes, yes.
And that's what Staudinger propagated. He was quite right.
Mm-hmm. And you then?
I didn't work on this.
You'd never worked on
it? I didn't like his methods, because he was it's a kind of brutal chemistry. He liked everything with much make noise and burst and give explosions. These are the things which he liked. And when he came to the laboratory,
yes,
perhaps twice a year to work there himself for
mm-hmm.
2 hours. Afterwards, it was just everything full of broken glass and...
That sounds awful. But how could he only work twice a year? He had his own laboratory, of course.
He had many assistants.
Oh, he worked in the student laboratory twice a year.
In the laboratory, in his uh-huh. own laboratory, where normally two assistants were working. They knew how to work.
And he didn't work himself there.
When he worked himself, everything
exploded.
Yes, because he only liked such reactions which explode.
Yeah.
Which gave noise and when he gave his lectures were very good,
mm-hmm.
But the maximum was always when he could give the lectures on trinitrobenzene. trinitrotoluene.
Toluene.
That's an explosive.
TNT.
And
yeah.
he put a little separatory funnel at the ceiling with nitroglycerin.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the drop was coming down every 20 seconds on a blech.
On a sheet.
Metal sheet. Which was heated.
From below. Yes.
And when the heat was low, then the drop came down and made a little noise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the hotter it became, the more
noise
it gave. And at a certain temperature, I can't remember which one, it was about 450 or 500 degrees, it makes a terrible noise, like a gun shoot, every drop.
Yes.
And then when you heat it still more to make it red,
hot,
then it goes down again.
I see.
The noise. It's lower.
That's a very interesting.
His mood went exactly in the same rhythm.
Yes.
He said, "Now listen."
Mm-hmm.
And he standed so, and then he came up, and when the thing was on its maximum, he was quite
jumped.
And very happy.
Yes.
And then when it's going down, he also went down, like he was. And that. He repeated that at least twice, from the lowest temperature
to the highest,
and then down, mm-hmm. and once again, mm-hmm. to show how fine it can make noise.
And I bet the students loved it.
Yes,
it was fun.
Interesting to look at him.
But you did. Take your doctoral work with him.
Yes,
I mean, you wrote a thesis under his guidance.
Yes.
And what was the thesis about?
Well, that was the time when that was during the wartime.
Yes, in 20 or
yes, I finished 20, but I started already a little
earlier. Yeah,
it was.
Entered, and so it must have been between
16 I started.
16 and 20.
I started 16 and 20. Yes, it was just after the war, but the problems were still the same, that he wanted to make some medicinally useful things.
He did?
Yes.
I see.
And that was a line which I was specially interested
in.
Yes. So I told him I would like to take such a thesis. And he told me to make artificial substituents for atropine and it was not only atropine, it was it was mainly atropine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was mainly atropine. And at this time it was still nitrogen containing part of this is the difficult one.
Mm-hmm.
It's two rings together, three rings, and at this time there was still the approach, the synthetic approach to such products was not really very well worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So he made a suggestion to. To make a similar compound with one ring missing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very general method how to transform or
make variations of nature.
Modify. The molecule.
So I liked this approach.
Yeah.
And I started and it went quite all right. But the product which you get is contains three asymmetric carbon atoms,
mm-hmm.
and therefore quite many of isomers are possible.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when he came once to visit me, he came once a week sometime,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't like complications or something which are tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, I followed your suggestion, and you can easily see the thing must give at least six different isomers. I want to separate them. So he became furious, because he didn't like such tricky things, to separate isomers. He went out immediately and didn't come for 2 weeks. And afterwards, he came again and told me that what I'm doing, so, and whether I will separate these things. I told him, yes, I told you that before. He always came and tells you the things which you suggest to him,
mm-hmm.
as if there was his idea. And it went quite well. I could separate them. It was not so difficult than he
thought. Did you use fraction crystallization?
Yes.
Something like that?
Some salts. Mm-hmm. Salt.
Yeah.
With one salt,
yes.
You can get the one form out and
I see.
And the thing was, I think it had some activity. He never told me that.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted always to make profits with the patents and so.
Yeah.
I was not interested in that. But the thing was finished after 1 year, and I told him it's finished.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Oh no, that's too quick.
Too short."
And then he made some more problems, and then he was suddenly interested in coffee flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an idea how to isolate the coffee flavor. The flavor of roasted coffee.
Yes.
And then from this moment on, the other work was quite sufficient for a thesis, and I can write it and uh-huh. send it off if I would like to analyze the coffee flavor. Mm-hmm. So I was ready to do it,
mm-hmm.
and I finished the thesis and made the exam.
That was your doctoral thesis,
yes. And it was printed.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started to about this coffee flavor, and there I realized that it was a very difficult job, because it's a very bad mixture of
mm-hmm.
different things.
Mm-hmm.
Some are extremely volatile,
mm-hmm.
go away, and some are not stable.
Yes.
Deteriorate within a mm-hmm. few days,
mm-hmm.
and the sense for flavor is very delicate. If you have such a mixture and you take only one or two things out, the rest will give a very unpleasant.
Oh yes, that's interesting.
And what I realized at this time also, that the very good smells, for instance, of some flowers,
mm-hmm.
jasmine mm-hmm. or roses or violets, the good smell, the really good smell, is only produced by some compounds present in very small quantity, which smell awfully bad, terribly, if they are alone or mm-hmm. concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
But without them, the good smell is not natural. It is like a cheap coiffure shop.
Mm-hmm. Is that something like Musk, for instance?
Musk is also so.
A compound.
Musk is a special. There are different compounds mm-hmm. which have the order of Musk. There are animal compounds and also vegetable compounds from volatile oils but these are big rings.
Yes, but the effect is similar if you take it away.
Yes, the pure compound, it doesn't smell bad. It smells like musk, with musk only we dilute it very much.
Very good.
Otherwise it.
So you worked on this coffee aroma,
yes, artist,
and in your own lab, you then had your own lab?
I had to arrange that with an industrial firm, because it soon became apparent that it will be very expensive.
I see.
Must find somebody with interest to pay the fee. And I could make an arrangement with a firm who was producing malt coffee.
What was the name of the firm? Do you remember that?
Yes, Katreiner's Malt Coffee. They were interested. They thought they could add a little of the thing to make their malt coffee smell like real coffee.
I see.
No, they were very, very, very pleasant people. They were interested to have it done, and we had to work through many, many tons of coffee to get only a few centimeter cube of the flavor. And
did you work on that in Zurich? You said it was
Zurich,
a German company, but
yes,
you had your own lab
in Zurich
then, and they financed it. I see.
I worked for 8 years, and my last assistant, who is still coming to today, he is now over 8 years old. He started then with me.
What is his name?
Fonoy.
Oh yes, you had many publications with him, didn't you? And then you went to the ETH.
And then I went. Then came Ochitska to the ETH.
Staudinger
left, and then came Kuhn.
Where did he go?
He went to Freiburg.
Freiburg.
And then came Richard Kuhn.
Yes.
And Richard Kuhn was quite young. I think he was 35. I can't remember more. But he was probably the youngest professor in the ETH came. He was very good, and he had an excellent lecture. And he had a very broad background. He gave once lectures for physics during 2 years. He was quite able to do it.
In addition to chemistry.
In addition to chemistry. And his chemical lectures were excellent.
Mm-hmm.
On a very different style. Staudinger gave also very good lectures.
Yes.
He was a very good lecturer.
Yes.
But on a rather primitive style.
Mm-hmm. A little flamboyant.
Yes, but it was quite good for the beginners.
Yes.
But Richard Kuhn had a very better foundation on general aspects and already on modern theories.
And then he
didn't stay long.
Yeah, when did he leave?
I can't remember the date. He stayed only about 2 or 3 years.
I see. Where did he go then?
He went to Heidelberg. At this time, Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, now Max Planck Institute.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he worked mainly on vitamins at this time.
Yes.
and he was therefore on very bad terms with Professor Karrer.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because Professor Karrer had the idea that the vitamins were only his
domain.
Domain, yes.
I see. So was that? Did that influence his decision to go, or was it just the prestige of?
He was not.
Of the new.
He was not quite happy
in Zurich.
No.
Yeah.
And he was a man. He liked the big style.
I see.
Life.
I see. Yeah, he couldn't have that really here.
Not so much.
No.
He could have quite sufficient. He was not unhappy in Zurich.
Yes.
He brought about 8 very good assistants.
Mm-hmm.
I had 2 or 3 became good friends of mine.
Did they stay on?
No.
Anybody fame?
They had to search search jobs when
yes.
they were finished.
Yes, I see. Oh, Kuhn got the Nobel Prize.
Yes. Staudinger also.
Staudinger and Kuhn,
yes,
and
yes.
Did he get it?
Zitzka also.
For, yes, and you did it?
Yes,
did
Prelog also.
Right.
It was just a line.
Just a sequence, just a tradition.
And Karrer also.
Did he get it for some work done at the ETH or?
Kuhn,
yes. Or not?
He started to work. Such work cannot be done in one place. You
yes.
you start somewhere, but the
yes.
main thing was done, I think, already. He came from Munich. He made already there. He made very good things.
I see.
He had really very good assistants.
Mm-hmm.
One of them stayed in the academic career, but the others not. Yes, 2.
Did they stay in Switzerland? What were
no,
their names?
No,
no they
the
went
one
to
went
Germany.
To America.
What was his name?
Wassermann.
Wassermann, yes.
He was first in some university in Germany, but he of Jewish origin, he went to America when he still could go.
I see. And then came Ruschitzka. And you were assistant to Ruschitzka.
Afterwards. Because I knew Ruschitzka when I worked with Staudinger, because Ruschitzka worked with Staudinger.
Yes, I see.
And he worked in the Souterrain. He had a very obscure cave there, and when I had time, I always went to him and looked what he's doing, because he was a very excellent experimental worker, just the contrary from Schaudinger.
Uh-huh.
He didn't make, he had not a very poor lecturing, and very good experimental work.
Yes.
And he was working from the morning till evening always in his cellar. And once when Staudinger was away, I went down for and worked with him for two weeks to learn his methods a little.
On natural products,
yes,
I guess. That was his specialty, always.
Yes.
And then you also had a lecture.
And Ruschitzka told me whether I wouldn't like to go back to the
teaching. Yes, I see. Also, he asked you to come back.
Yes, he asked me, and otherwise I would never have gone.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that with him I could. I could be free to work what I like.
Yes.
And he would always help me if necessary, and he also did.
So you had 2 lectures on methods and on heterocyclic chemistry?
Yes. And then afterwards was what they called physiological chemistry. physiological
I see,
thing.
Yes.
That's called today biochemistry.
Yes.
It was in a very primitive state at this time.
It was not really developed at the ETH for a long time, wasn't it? Not as a separate discipline.
It was. There was even Winterstein.
I attended some of his lectures at the ETH. Yes, I liked that. On medicinal chemistry.
Yes, exactly, yes. That was the cold sober, but it's the same. Uh-huh.
And he went then to America. He was the one who went to America, or... Or did he not?
That was his son.
Oh, that was his son, I see. And then you became assistant to Ruschitzka in 1931?
Yes.
Is that right?
Maybe.
And
sometime around 30 years.
Well, from your curriculum, I read that you became an assistant professor in 1934 and an associate in 1937.
That's just official titles.
And then you went to Basel.
Yes.
In
and then I got some difficulties with Ruschitzka.
You did. Was that the reason why you?
That was the reason.
Went to Basel.
That can happen always.
I don't know if you want to tell us what the difficulties were or not.
You know, he had always very much cooperation with industrial people.
Yes, I know
and
that.
He worked mainly on steroid hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And through his contracts with the industry, he was in a slightly queer position, because I have started to work. I wanted to start on some things which are interesting for medical use.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I started was the vitamin C.
Yes.
You see the story is here.
Yes, that's the big story.
That was in 1933 when we succeeded to get the thing, and that they made Mr. Karl furious. He asked Ruschitzka why he allows some of his assistants to work on vitamins. Then he told him that he doesn't prescribe his assistants what they can work. They could choose alone. Karl couldn't do. He was in the university and they had no connections.
Yes.
But so he was. He could always get along with Karl Ruschitzka.
He could or he couldn't.
He could.
Yes, he could.
He knew. And he often told him quite funny things, uh-huh, which nobody else could tell Karl.
I see.
But Kuhn was on extremely bad terms with Karl.
Yeah.
So they didn't speak to each other.
Well, there was a lot of competition. All these people working in the same field.
In a very silly way.
Yes. But you managed to get the synthesis of vitamin C, and
yes.
I'd like you to tell us a little bit about about that story.
This helped me to become a little independent.
Mm-hmm.
But when this was over, I wanted to make all other things which have medical interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I had good friends in Holland, and Dr. Tausk, who's worked through a medical man who has a very broad view on things which are necessary in medicine.
Yes.
And I spoke with him and told him that I would like to do something which is of interest for medicine, chemical work. And he said, he's still living.
Yes.
He was director of the Organon at this time, as a scientific director.
Yes.
And he knew a lot of medicine, and he suggested me four or five different things which would be interesting if the chemistry could be cleared up, and perhaps the thing made by synthesis. Mm-hmm. The one was vitamin B12, and the other was the adrenal cortex, the hormones of the adrenal.
Yes.
And three other things. And I looked the literature through for the next evening, what I could find about these problems. And I told him the next day that I think the only one which is really ready to be worked with chemical methods would be the adrenal hormones. Mm-hmm. And that I would like to work on that if he can procure me the material. Because it's you must have extracts of the adrenal glands, and that needs a big organization to get that. So yeah, that's no problem for them, because they prepare it already.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a contract with him, and it was all going well. And I accepted this because from the literature I had the impression that at least these ones, from the description that you say, these are water soluble things, not soluble in ether and fat and so on, that cannot be steroids, because steroids are always insoluble in water, easily soluble in ether and so on. That was the only thing which was known. And I didn't want to work on steroids, because I knew that we'll get trouble with Ruchitska, because he had a contract with the Tziva, and make him get good. Now the funny thing is that I started to work, and after a few months I had the first pure things. And immediately I saw there were steroids, but on a different kind. They were more hydroxylated and therefore partially soluble in water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't stop it anymore. I told Uchitsuka about that. He knew everything. But the industrial people started to make him trouble that he grows there a man in his institute, who's working for the competition.
For the competition, yes, yes.
And so he more or less gave me the choice: either I leave Zurich or I make another work.
I see.
So I told him I can't change that. I have a contract, so I will have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know where to go. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And very funny that the next morning, Dr. Barrell from here, from Basel, turned up in Zurich and asked whether he could speak with me for a quarter of an hour. He was representative of what they called the curatel.
Mm-hmm.
That's the body which is responsible for the university.
Mm-hmm.
They work on Ehrenhalber. They are not paid.
Yeah, yes.
They are only important people.
Volunteers,
yes,
in a way.
Yes, they make it. Yeah. He
honorary.
It's not a whole day's job.
Yes,
it's
yes.
Only in special cases that they make decisions for the university. So he said he has he comes in the Auftrag
in on behalf of
the university, whether I would accept a position at the pharmaceutical institute of Basel. He knows that that's not sufficient for my ambition, but he is forced to tell me that. So I told him, no way, it's not too little for me. Mm-hmm. I will think about it, and I can tell him straight off, I will accept it with pleasure if the institute can be renewed in a way so that you can really work there in it.
Mm-hmm.
So he was quite astonished, and he said he would telephone me again. Next morning he telephoned me, and I went to Basel and looked at the institute, and I brought a few technicians with me to tell them what they would have to change in the institute. And after 3 days it was already arranged. I could speak with the Regierungsrat Hauser, this time, Erziehungsdepartement.
Mm-hmm. Like a senator.
Yes, and he is responsible for that. And
mm-hmm.
He said there will be still a commission to decide, but if he says yes, it will be it. Yes, it is.
So you went.
I will make everything that the thing can really start in October.
Mm-hmm.
And in 15th of September it could already. It was finished. And it was, I think, the cheapest institute they got in Basel. Because it was a very old house from the 15th century, where already Paracelsus had worked in.
Oh, how interesting.
It's very interesting. And they had only to renew it inside. So for instance, the floor was going this way,
uh-huh.
And they had to renew and several things, but the whole thing was about, I think, 265,000 francs. That's nothing for...
In 1938.
Yes. That was really, even at this time, it was very little.
Yes, yes.
And it was a really good institute afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
And you headed it. You became the head of the institute.
Yes, I became the head of the institute. And I had to teach the pharmacists. It was not so much lecturing.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't mind. I was always interested in pharmacists. My uncle was pharmacist, and when I was 5 years, I worked in his
pharmacy.
I had never other ambitions. I was quite happy there in this institute. It's a really very nice small institute, and I went over to chemistry only in 1946.
I see, so this was really pharmaceutical,
the pharmaceutical institute.
And then you headed the chemistry.
Yes.
Organic chemistry.
But that was not quite easy.
Yes.
Because at this time there was very much opposition against the university in the population of Basel.
Why?
They said that needs too much money. We need the money for football places, for bars places, and for sporting and for Gewerbeschule.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what
trade school
for learning to be
a trade Vocational school, we say.
Very useful.
Yes, but
necessary.
It's not a substitute.
And I told them that it's something else, and I am also quite convinced that you must get a new one.
Yes.
The old Gewerbeschule is really in a bad state. But that doesn't mean that...
you don't need a new university.
And the people who have to decide, it's the Großer Rat. And these are, on the whole, very reasonable people, but they have never studied, and they don't know what chemistry is for. They know only that there are some big factories, and they say, yes, they are very rich, they can pay them themselves. So I had to make invitations to groups of these representatives and show them what we are doing and what it is for, and that the institute is not only for the rich people, that also sons of workers are studying today, not very many, but there are quite a number. And it was really worthwhile to do, but I had 2 years to do nothing else than talk to people and explain them what the university is for and what the chemical institute is for and why they should not why they should give the money which is necessary for the new institute. And the new institute was much more expensive. It did cost more than 10 times as much as to rebuild the pharmaceutical one, because we couldn't leave the walls. We had to tear everything down and make a new one. And after 2 years, there was Abstimmung, votation.
They voted.
Not a single one was against it.
So you got it through.
I got it through.
Very good.
But it was
good public relation.
It was a very hard work. And in these 2 years, I had many nervous breakdowns, because I had to look after about 50 students working on the doctor's degree, dissipated in different laboratories all over the town. There was no institute.
There was no institute.
There was an institute, but it was absolutely unusable.
Well, did you get funds from industry, from all those rich
people in industry? Yes,
you
some.
Did. But not
the main,
not that
the
much.
Main thing at the bother.
The town had to pay it. To the pay. City, yes.
But they got it. It cost 3.7 million francs. And when the thing was finished, many people were invited, and the people from the industry told me that they would never be able to get such a institute for this price, that it was really they would have to pay at least twice as much if they were.
Yes,
and they were, because I had very much help from the town, and they had architect didn't cost anything. They had one.
That's
and the all the technical staff was already there. They had only to mobilize it. And they made it, they made it with much interest. It was very well made, and it is still in first class state now.
So you had
nearly 50 years old.
You headed it until when? When did you retire?
67.
67, yeah. And then you became Professor Emeritus?
Yes, yes.
And you stayed on?
I'm doing now nearly only botany.
Yes, I heard that. Well, we get back to that. I would like to ask you some question about your work. So your first work, of course, was on sugar and including vitamin
C. Could you tell us
a little bit about the vitamin C synthesis? There's so many interesting stories connected.
Yes, but I think I gave you the story.
Yes, you did, but I would like to have it on tape, if I may.
It was, of course, my first work, which with an industrial background, because I in the ATI I had no other position that I had just the permission to work there, and I think 300 francs as assistant per month.
That's not much.
No, it's not meant to be much, but it's just a little help. But you cannot live on forever. So, and I was not at this time. I was really not yet persuaded that I will stay in the university forever, because the situations are not very pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there only because Rochitska was there, and I was quite sure that with him I can work
yes.
well. So I have always followed the literature about vitamins, and there was a formula for vitamin C. Vitamin C was first isolated by Saint Gergi. He's
yes.
still living.
Yes. He is?
He's still living.
Yeah.
Yeah. He will be 90. But in America.
Where? Do you know?
Isn't it Princeton? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, well.
I'm not quite sure. I never had correspondence with him. But I met him two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
And he isolated from adrenal glands.
Mm-hmm.
And he called it hexuronic acid. And he gave the correct formula for it. And he found out afterwards that it is really active in preventing scurvy.
Scurvy, yes.
In guinea pigs.
Mm-hmm.
You have to test it. The only
yes.
animal
yes.
which needs it.
Mm-hmm.
Aside of people and apes.
Oh, really?
Yes, the rat and so on, they can make
they
their own.
They can make it, I
and
see.
The other can make their own. That's one of the reasons that the people think that the human beings come from the tropics.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the tropics, the food is very rich in vitamin C. Much more so than in all over the world, but that doesn't do with the synthesis. And in the coffee flavor, I had to do very much with furans.
Yes.
There are quite many furans mm-hmm. present, and I have worked a little on furans, the chemistry mm-hmm. of furans, and made some reactions there. And the first formula which was published on vitamin C contained a furan ring
mm-hmm.
system.
Yes.
So I said, if we work so long on furans, why not try whether one can synthesize this thing if it's a furan. So there came a young Austrian who unfortunately died early, Oppenauer was his name. He came to ask whether he would can make a thesis with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I said yes, and on what? So I shall suggest something. So I said I'll tell him tomorrow, I will think about it. And I told him whether, among other things, whether he would like to try to make vitamin C, and perhaps if this formula is correct, he can suggest himself some ways how to do it. So he came next morning and suggested about 5 different things. I looked at them and told him, in his case, I would start this one, that's the quickest check.
Which was that?
What? That was with ozone with cyanic acid.
Mm-hmm. From ozone of what?
Ozone of
xylose.
It would be xylose.
Xylose, yes. Yes.
Xylose, ozone. With hydroxyanic acid. Mm-hmm. That would give the 6 carbon atoms necessary. Mm-hmm. So he's. But first we make a model with glucose and so on. And so he said yes, and he started. And the thing worked immediately. And we had to start with xylose, because the L-xylose, which would be necessary to get the right thing,
the L, yes,
is not available.
Ascorbic acid
is not available. Mm-hmm. And at this time, one knew already more or less that it should be the L. Was not really published, but I could see from the results that it must be the L.
Was it just a guess or?
It was a guess from a rotation which was given somewhere, mm-hmm. from a degradation product.
I see, yeah.
And
from the natural vitamin C that had been isolated.
No, it was, yes,
from natural vitamin
C, degradation product. That was by Hurst, from the English mm-hmm. school with mm-hmm. Haber's. They worked for many years on that, for very many years, and they work rather slowly, carefully, but very slowly. And then the thing came out, and then we had to prepare the alkylose, and that is not quite easy. There are methods described how it can be done. It needed about 4 or 6 weeks, nearly day and night work to get it. Mm-hmm. And we worked all 3, that was Oppenauer, Fonoy and myself, to get the xylose, to add the xylose. Mm-hmm. And we had, I think, about 2 or 3 grams after 4 or 5 weeks. And with this we made the xylosone, which is a poor yield, and from this we could produce a few milligrams of the correct ascorbic acid. And we published this, and Carra was of course upset, and Mr. Haber's was slightly shocked, but he was he didn't show it, and he invited me even to give a lecture in Aberdeen.
Yes.
I had afterwards some difficulties with him, but he was not quite an easy man, but he was quite correct. Quite correct.
Well, he was quite a famous sugar chemist.
Yes, he was a great specialist. Mm-hmm. I was not a sugar chemist, and I made some formula which he didn't like, but on the whole. And then I knew that the thing can be made, but this method is completely useless on big scale. It cannot be. And I tried to think something else out, and found the approach via sorbose, that's another sugar which mm-hmm. is also known in nature. It can is perhaps promising. I couldn't tell it yet. Mm-hmm. And we tried to get sorbose. That was not available at this time. but it was known that it is possible to get it from sorbitol. Sorbitol is quite easily to produce from glucose by reduction. It was even on the market already, sorbitol.
Yeah.
But one can make it by the ton without any difficulty.
That's with hydrogen.
With hydrogen.
Reduction,
just,
yes.
Just
regular
catalytic
reduction. Yes.
With catalytic reduction with one nickel, I think it's the best thing. Can do it in any. But that's just the cleanest. There's no residues.
Good yield.
Give about nearly 100% yield.
Mm-hmm.
It's no difficulty. It doesn't introduce any new asymmetric center. It's only a reduction of an aldehyde group and finished. But then to make solvos of that, the only good way is a biological process, an oxidative fermentation, and the organism which make this were known, but not very well known. It was described as a so-called xylose bacterium. In German it is called Essigmutter.
Oh yes.
You know, it's such a slimy mass. When you,
it's Acetobacter.
Yes,
Acetobacter.
Acetobacter is the good one, but this old one, this Xylobacterium xylosum, called, it's a slimy mass.
Yes, yes.
It was used to produce vinegar from wine.
Yes, right. Right.
And that's exactly the same reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You oxidize a hydroxy group to the aldehyde group, or in this case to acid, to acid in vinegar.
In vinegar, yeah.
But and I tried to get it, and the thing which I got from different places, there are such bureaus which cultivate different bacteria for industrial use.
Yes.
They didn't work.
It wasn't good.
They were degenerated or something.
Yes.
I don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
They were still alive. They did multiply, but they didn't produce any solvos. So I read an article by Mr. Bertrand, that's an old French chemist, who described in 1800 and something how he got it. You take some sugar, add some wine, and a little water to dilute, and let it stand to attract Drosophila.
Yes,
and
the fruit
Drosophila
fly
has always the active bacterium in her its intestine.
Mm-hmm.
It brings the thing, and afterwards it starts, and sorbitol will immediately be transformed into sorbose. So I read this carefully, and I tried it. It made a solution of sorbitol with some yeast extract. I was told by bacteriologists that that's always good as food for the bacteria. A little yeast extract and a little wine to attract them, smell.
Mm-hmm.
But it was already October and very cold at nights. I didn't believe that any flies will come at this temperature. And I put 10 beakers with this liquid on the window out of my little cell laboratory.
At the ETH?
ETH, yes. And when I came on Monday, they were all dried out, but in two of the beakers were full of crystals, the bottom. I tested them, they were pure zorbos, and in the one of the beakers you could even see a Drosophila was drowned, it was dead, and from its body the crystals came out like...
That's amazing.
Like the middle point of a star.
That's amazing.
And all I had to do is to nucleate
other samples.
Yes.
Or batches. Other batches.
Of such
nutrient media.
And to let the thing grow. But it was, of course, a terrible mixture. There were not only the good bacteria, but very many others. But I didn't mind because I have seen and knew that the thing is stands very strong acid. So I could put about 2% of acetic acid to it. So reduce growth of everything else, but the thing grew very well in acid.
Its
optimum growth was of this thing. So within 2 days we could produce 100 grams of zorbos quite easily. And even afterwards when I turned this thing over to Roche, they used this bacterium which I gave them. It was the best they could get. They tried very hard to raise better strains. They succeeded, I think, about a year afterwards. But during the first year, they could use this strain. They purified it for a bacteriologist. It's not so difficult to purify such a strain. And then the rest of the work worked like the program. It did really get in a very good yield. I could get grams of vitamin C, and I brought it to Roche together with a friend of mine. We made a contract with them, and they produce it still today with the same, more or less,
the same
principle.
Methods. And you got the patent on the method, didn't you?
We got the
fortunately.
Patent. Yes.
So
I could finance the rest of all the laboratory work.
From the royalties. That was wonderful. But you were, in a way, a pioneer in biochemical or, let's say, in bioengineering?
It was at this time.
Must have been very...
They didn't like it.
They didn't like it. The chemists didn't like it?
The chemists didn't like any bacteriological process because they knew it is sensitive to any unknown disturbances from the air or from the...
They couldn't handle that, probably.
But this was quite easy to handle. As far as I know, they had never difficulties with this one. It's not so difficult like with penicillin and these things which must be kept completely sterile. This works even with under quite dirty conditions. But they make it sterile.
It's amazing, yes. So they are still using this.
They are still using it. There's no other means to get cheap zorbos than by a biological process.
Did you have any contact with Pauling over vitamin C? I mean, this is the famous vitamin C proponent.
I had contact with Pauling when he needed some things, some signature, or some. He wanted to. start some good work for something.
Oh, his political courses, I see. Your next great field of interest then was hormones, as you already mentioned.
We already talked about that.
But you say that Hoffmann La Roche in Basel sponsored or was interested in your vitamin C work.
Yes, yes. They bought the patent. The patent, yes.
And then on your steroids.
Only to check further possibilities, you know. Very often you can make substituents which are not quite natural.
Like, I see, analogs.
And say analogs.
Yeah.
They wanted to know whether perhaps some other analog will even be better than vitamin C. I had to synthesize quite a number of analogs.
Yes.
And homologs.
And did you find any activity?
No. Yes, no. There's some activity,
but not greater activity than
with the vitamins. It's difficult.
I see.
The vitamin is usually the optimum.
Yes.
You sometimes can find some improvement to make it more resistant to degradation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the natural vitamin, most fungi and bacteria know how to destroy the mm-hmm. natural thing.
I see.
If you introduce a metal group or so, they can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case,
there was no
reason.
So
it didn't be better.
So
there were only a few who are also active in mm-hmm. the scurvy guinea pig.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing special. No.
So actually your sugar work then was finished rather quickly. You published about 30 papers on it.
I worked on the sugars of the cardiac glucosides.
Right, after
these
that.
These are very funny.
That came later. So in between you worked on hormones first.
Yes,
could we talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
So your main field of investigation were the hormones of the adrenal cortex, the corticotropic hormones. You actually got the Nobel Prize in 1950 with Hensch and Kendall.
Yes.
And
we had always a kind of competition with Kendall.
You did?
Kendall was...
Where did he work?
He worked in the Mayo Clinic.
Yes.
He worked in the Mayo Clinic. Hensch worked in the Mayo Clinic.
Well, I thought that Kendall was also at the Mayo Clinic, yes.
Rochester, Minnesota.
Yes. And what...
No, Kendall was in a similar way obstinate on the adrenal glands, like Staudinger.
Obsessed with.
Like Staudinger
yes,
with polymers. He had the idea that these hormones are good for everything. You can cure every ailment and everything you can make with hormones. And therefore he was just on one line. So.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his strength, but also his kind of...
His weakness.
Weakness. And he did quite good work, but we were always a little quicker usually.
I see. Well, it's...
And I had not so many... he had very, very much more material available.
More support.
More support and...
More money.
And so, but we had perhaps a little more experience how to work with small quantities.
How to
use the reactions which are necessary to with these hormones.
Uh-huh. Well, I read that you had a magic touch when it came to crystallization.
Yes, something
else. And I guess that played a role too.
I like to work in the laboratory.
So you isolated.
That came just in the, perhaps in the end with the aldosterone.
Oh, I see.
That was the most difficult one.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's the thing which was called by Kendall the amorphous fraction.
Really? You couldn't crystallize it?
That's not a very appropriate name, because mm-hmm. there were thousands of amorphous fractions.
Mm-hmm.
Anything which doesn't mm-hmm. crystallize is an mm-hmm. amorphous fraction. But the one which he meant was the thing which contained the aldosterone.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing for which the adrenal was famous, the adrenal gland is necessary for life.
Mm-hmm.
That was known, because if you take it out or if it disappears, the people die. Addison's disease.
Yes, yes.
That was lethal before mm-hmm. these things were known. Mm-hmm. And it has several reasons, but the main reason is obviously that the regulation of the mineral salts is lost.
Mm-hmm.
So you can keep the adrenalectomized animals even alive with giving him high diet of kitchen salt.
Yes.
But the first it was known that you can keep them alive by injecting daily with extracts from adrenal glands.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, so it was shown it was really a material matter, hormone, would you say today, mm-hmm. that is responsible for the for the life-maintaining action of the gland. And then the second point was to get a test for it. And several tests were developed, and at this time when I started and when Kendall made his work, there was a test developed by Wintersteiner and Zwingel was the name, with adrenalectomized dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they could keep these dogs alive just with giving injections daily with adrenal extracts. And you could use these dogs to test the activity of samples,
mm-hmm.
and also of pure compounds. And this test, this test in the dog, Zwingel's dog test, it's mainly a response for the content of aldosterone. There are three different active principles in the gland. In the first approach,
mm-hmm.
there are more than that.
Mm-hmm.
The one is the hydrocortisone.
Yes.
That's the most complicated compound, and this is not very active in this test. It is the most important from the medical point of view today because it's responsible for its effect as anti-allergic and in this respect. But to keep the adrenalectomized dog alive, the aldosterone is the most important. And it is about 1,000 times more active than the other. And Kendall tried to isolate it, but never succeeded.
But you crystallized it.
Crystallized it finally, because
in 1953
it was the preliminary important work was done by. I gave you also the two English people, Simpson and Tate.
Yeah, yes.
They found out a test which is very specific and can be done with extremely small quantities. And so they could test it in the chromatographs. They could show that this is the compound.
Yes.
The place where it moves in the chromatogram. There are very, very many compounds. Just this one is the really active thing. And we worked then afterwards together with Gibson and Tate, and we made separation here in Basel and sent him the fraction which we thought was the correct one, and it was the wrong. But we sent him also some crystals, and these were the correct one.
I see. And did you work together with Americans on hormones?
No, not directly.
Not directly. But you had.
I corresponded much with Wintersteiner.
Wintersteiner.
He's an Austrian, but he worked in Colombia.
I see. But you had a lot of.
He was the first, I think, who isolated more or less pure things. And then I also corresponded with Kendall.
Yes.
And I met him once in America also. But Wintersteiner was a much better chemist, but he gave it up.
He gave it up? Why? You mean he gave up hormones, but not chemistry?
This work, he said.
Yeah.
He has even isolated cortisone.
He has isolated cortisone.
He was the first.
But you worked on the constitutional elucidation,
partly. Yes, I got it also afterwards. But he was the first to isolate, but he gave it up because it was inactive in the test. He used the dog test.
Oh, yeah?
And cortisone is inactive in
I
the dog
see.
Test, or nearly inactive.
Well, who found then that it's... active in
other tests.
In other tests.
That was by Kendall used what they call the I forgot at the moment in the rats.
Well, did he find the activity?
He found some activity, but it is much less active even in his test. But it has some activity. And Ingalls' test. Ingalls' test. Ingalls was, I think, with industrial with Merck, if I correctly remember.
I think Merck sponsored a lot of this work in America.
Merck prepared the first 5 grams of cortisone.
I see. And then they tested it on humans eventually, I assume.
Because when it was finished, they didn't know what to do with
it. They didn't know that it was an antiarthritic drug?
It was made by because there were rumors that the Germans use such things to bring for the airplanes you know, they were attacking.
Oh, the test pilots.
The pilots were attacking the troops.
Yes.
By descending.
Vertical, yeah.
Descending.
Yes.
A very dangerous thing.
Yes.
And a very great. That the American government encouraged industrial enterprises to produce cortisone.
Mm-hmm.
And among these was Mehmet Gartenkegel. Among these was Merck, who made first the 5 gram of cortisone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the war was over.
Yes.
And they had no use for it anymore. They couldn't try it out with such pilots.
Uh-huh.
And all, perhaps they didn't believe it anymore. And Hensch and Kendall was always persuaded that this is good for everything. But Hensch was more precise. He said that he found that very severe arthritis is not cured but reversed,
mm-hmm,
in two conditions.
Mm-hmm.
That one is pregnancy,
mm-hmm,
and the other is yellow.
Jaundice.
Yes.
I see.
And what is the reason?
Yes.
What can be the reason, mm-hmm, that the two conditions have nothing to do with each other? And he found that in both conditions, the content of cortisone in the blood is much higher than normal. So he said it may be worthwhile to try cortisone in rheumatic arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And he applied to get some of the material of these 5 grams to try it out. And it worked.
Was he a doctor or was he a chemist?
No, he was a doctor.
He was a doctor.
In a Mayo clinic.
In a Mayo clinic.
No, but
Kendall was a chemist.
Kendall
a biochemist.
He was a chemist. But Hensch tried it out on patients who were in a chair, mm-hmm, couldn't walk anymore, crippled,
mm-hmm,
completely,
mm-hmm,
gave them injections, they could stand up and walk. So it was like a wonder.
It's a miracle drug.
Yes, they found afterwards that it's not a real cure, but nevertheless it gave a clue,
mm-hmm,
and showed that the condition is reversible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not irreversible condition. And they found many other really good applications. And that was more or less the start. Now it's an enormous amount produced.
Yes, yes.
And it is misused also, because it's not quite harmless. No good drug is
harmless. No, there are all the side effects.
All
no, that
it's dangerous if you overdo it.
So when you got the Nobel Prize, that must have been quite an event. How did you learn about it? Did they send you a telegram?
Yes, that's something. But a friend of mine came from Sweden.
Uh-huh. Oh, really? He knew about it already?
He worked with us in the Totengate line, in the pharmaceutical, uh-huh, institute. He worked there for a year or more. He got it all also now afterwards. It was
what's his name?
Bergström, Sune Bergström. He worked on the
Did he get it for medicine or for chemistry?
Yes, for For both.
Both.
Similar.
Similar to you. So did they celebrate you in Basel?
Yes,
Must have been quite a celebration.
More than necessary.
More than necessary. Well, you're too modest.
It's very useful sometimes. You can get things which you otherwise wouldn't get.
You get funds. Who sponsored your hormone research? Was that?
That was exactly this company
Dutch company.
Afterwards,
I thought you had some SIBA.
Yes, I could make it so that the two firms made an arrangement together. Because afterwards I was free. I had no.
No strings attached?
No strings attached.
They never made any suggestions or anything, so it was never a conflict of interest.
Shall we have some tea now?
Yes, thank you. Professor Reichstein, you were instrumental in the structural elucidation of cortisone and of other steroids, corticosterone. And could you tell us a little bit about the relationship between structure and bioactivity?
I think it would be a little too long. There are two important biological activities at this time known. The one is the regulation of the mineral metabolism, in which the aldosterone is the most active compound, and the regulation of the carbohydrate metabolism, in which the cortisol-like material is the most active. But in both for both activities, it's a special chemical structure. It's important in the molecule, which is not known at this time. That's the oxygen position in position 11, and in order to synthesize. Or make a partial synthesis of such compounds, we were looking for material which contains such oxygen in 11 position. And there are very few such natural products. Among others, there are 7 cardiac glycosides. And we have therefore investigated quite many of them. The first reason was really to get some starting material for production of cortisol. But that was not the way which led to much success, because when such material was found finally, other people found out other approaches which were more appropriate for industrial production. That was fermentation with special organisms who were able to introduce such oxygen in this position directly.
Yes, well, that's interesting.
And that's the way. How they are produced today in big amounts.
Bioengineering again.
It's also an oxidative fermentation, but with very special organisms which are necessary.
Well, you mentioned glycosides, which really turns out to be your next big field of interest, and it's interesting to see that your two fields, like your sugar chemistry and your steroid chemistry, is combined in the glycosides.
Yes, but usually you have very special type of sugars in
glycosides.
We were interested to study them.
That was pure basic research. That did not have any any goals, any medicinal purpose.
Not directly, no.
No, not directly. But then the egg-like cones turned out to be cardiac active. Many of these.
The glycosides are cardiac.
Oh, the glycosides, not the. I see.
Yes, but very few of them are really used. It's one of the examples where natural products are still used and cannot be synthesized in a reasonable way, and cannot be made better by
molecular modification or something like that.
I see. The natural products like digitoxin and similar products which are used.
What are the basic starting materials? I read that you extracted the glycosides from seeds and all kind of plant material.
Yes,
We
investigated afterwards as many plants as we just got, quite different. They can be found in quite different families, but most work was done with Trophanthus, African, mainly African genus of Apocynaceae family, where we could get the first 11 oxygen containing steroid out. It was dimethoxygen. And therefore we investigated quite a lot of Trophanthus, and it was afterwards also interesting to correlate the chemical structure with the botanical classification.
Is that what got you into botanics?
I was always a little interested in botany, but
you were before.
I had to get in touch with botanists. It was very difficult to get well identified material, plant material for chemical investigation. If you get plant material, you must know exactly what you are analyzing, otherwise it's useless. It's not always easy to get it well identified.
Did any commercially important drugs come out of this research?
No.
But hormones, can you name trade names of drugs or of hormone products that you would say that you have prepared or done the basic research for?
I was only involved in the investigation of the adrenocortical hormones.
I see.
Cortisone and aldosterone. To isolate the material and to prove the structure.
You also did some work on toad venoms and.
Yes, with some co-workers. We try to investigate them because they are closely related to the plant glycosides, and some have very similar structures. Only the side ring is different. They contain a six-membered ring instead of a five-membered.
I see.
But they are also rather active and probably used as a defense mechanism.
Like the cardenolides, the heart poisons, there's some interesting group that is or represents a defense mechanism in insects.
Insects, yes, some insects can use them.
How do they use them?
Yes, they just store them.
I see. So
they become poisonous.
They become poisonous.
Yes, they must develop. They must develop the possibility to ingest them without being to kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can do that, then they become so poisonous that they are avoided by predators.
I see. Well, how do they know it? Do they smell it? Before they ingest them.
Some of the insects develop also a strategy that they produce very, very impressive colors, red and yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
mm-hmm.
so they don't hide themselves. They show that they are something.
Yes.
And if a bird has once eaten such a thing, such a red and yellow one,
uh-huh.
he will know that it is not good.
It recognizes it. Oh, I see that.
He will leave the next.
That's interesting. You, in botanics, which has been your main field, you have published a great number of papers in the last years. Was it 20 years or...?
Yes, perhaps 20 years. Not so many.
Not so many. So you're actually becoming well known in botany?
Yeah, I'm specialized a little in ferns.
In ferns. And you have a culture, a garden, a fern garden next to your house, which is your big hobby now?
Yes.
So what do you do?
I breed them and I make hybrids. In order to establish the ancestors, if one can.
I see. But you're not investigating them chemically.
No. Yes, I did it.
Or would you use them medicinally?
No.
There's no medicinal value in.
So I did work on a special group for that so-called dryopteris, which was used once for medicinal purposes, an anti-tape worm.
Yes?
Yes.
In form of tea or?
In form of, yes, an extract.
An extract.
It is obsolete today.
Uh-huh. I see.
Too dangerous.
Too toxic.
Too toxic. But the things which are toxic can be used quite well for identification purposes of the plants,
mm-hmm.
and show their relations and that quite well.
Professor Reichstein, I would like to wrap this up gradually, but I still have some more questions for you. We have mentioned the Nobel Prize in 1950, and you also got the Marcel Benoist Prize in 1948, and you have had many other honors, like your honoris causa doctor of 7 universities. Are there any American universities among those? Are you an honorary doctor of an American university?
No.
Or a member of a scientific society in United States?
Several.
What could you name them? American Chemical Society.
No, the.
Or the American Academy of
Academy
Science.
And there's another Academy of New York.
Chemists, yes, I think.
No.
General.
And
do you have?
I have also the American Fern Society.
Fern Society. And do you have any special relationship with anybody in the United States, with the university, or
yes,
special
had,
friends? Or
I had with quite many.
Could you name a few?
I have no very few anymore. Recently, I had the visit of Professor Pitti from Arizona.
Yes. Well, there must be many people who have visited you in Basel.
I had one friend as Klaus Hoffmann in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
He's retired also now.
And you must have given lectures, many lectures in...
Yes, once that was in... Was it 46? I was about for 2 months in America and gave quite a lot of lectures.
I see. You were invited.
We were invited, yes, and then... You give a lecture in one town and they pay you the ticket to go to the next town. To get rid of you, and then you give a lecture again in the next town. And so you come from the East Coast to the West Coast. And I ended in Pasadena. And I had a friend there who was astrophysics. We went there up to the Mount Palomar, where they have now the big telescope.
Observatory, yes.
And at this time there was only a very small hut there on top of it.
Oh, yes?
The road was already finished and well laid out. And we took some food with us for 5 days. Could make our own cooking. There was nobody there.
Nobody. And except
he had the stars. He had the key for, and he took a little telescope with him, and others were deposited there. And he worked during the night, and I looked around during the day. It was probably then the nicest place I could
have found.
No, we didn't see a single sound.
There was still real wilderness there many years ago.
He worked on the supernovae this time. He found them.
Yes, what was his name?
Fritz Zwicky.
Zwicky, he was a Swiss origin,
Swiss,
yes, and very well known.
They called him Swiss, he was. He had always difficulties with people. He had a position as in the University of in Pasadena, and he at the same time had a factory for rockets.
I see.
He developed rockets, and I think he was the one who told them how to produce these things which I use so much now.
Well, to go back to chemistry, you have of course published a lot. You have been prolific, and I saw that you published over 700 papers, and partly even in English. Mainly you published in Helvetica Chimica Acta and Pharmaceutica Acta Helvetia. Some in Nature and Experientia, and are there others that you would like to mention? In the United States, maybe you published
in the
American Chemical Society.
I didn't like to publish in English.
Now absolutely.
I publish everything in English.
You do, yes.
Nobody has read it.
I noticed that all of a sudden your titles appear in English. And finally, if I may ask you a few philosophical questions. First of all, you have attained a very high age and you're still in very in excellent shape, and I wonder if you have a secret for longevity.
No secret, but I think that as long as you are interested in life and you can work, that is probably the best you can do for yourself.
Yes.
If you stop work and
stop being active.
Stop. Yes, one can. It's not necessary to be too active always, but I think some activity you must still.
You must have an interest mainly,
interest,
a focus.
Yes, otherwise, you don't know what you live.
But you've seen a lot of changes in chemistry from classical approach with your structural elucidation that took years into instrumentation, and I saw that you also changed from purely chemical approaches to, say, UV spectroscopy, and
you must of course take
other methods and
take advantage of the possibilities which are available. If you can make a structure determination with in 2 weeks
instead of 2 years.
Yes,
so you were comfortable with the change. Some chemists were not. And
it's not always quite easy to follow
to adjust
things
yes.
which are going on now.
Uh-huh.
But for structure determination, if you have a good friend who makes you an X-ray
then you use it certainly.
Yes.
But would you
study? I can't do it myself.
Yes.
I wouldn't be interested to learn it.
No, you have to have a specialist.
It's too much computer work.
Too mechanical. So one of my last questions would be:
yes.
Would you study chemistry again? In its present state, or would you?
I don't know. Well, why not?
Would you?
Why not?
Think it has lost its appeal.
It's probably study more from the biological point of view.
You would study biochemistry. Yes, I see.
And biology,
but you basically liked your field and
yes,
brought
you
a lot.
Otherwise, I
satisfaction. And one question that I had, that's a touchy subject today, what you think of animal experiments. There's so much noise against it, and many of your...
I think one should try to make the animal experiment really in a human way.
Yes, yes.
That's the most important, and probably one can reduce quite a lot of them. Quite a lot of animal essays can be replaced by other methods.
Yes.
It would be possible. And they are already replaced.
But you don't think that we
you
can part entirely from...
Entirely, no.
Or
but one can do it so that the animals don't suffer too much.
Yes. So it's a good trend to demand a more
yes,
humane
I would
approach.
Think so. It's a very good trend.
It's necessary.
Yes.
Well, I think that should conclude our interview, and I thank you very much that you have given it to me, and you have given me so much insight in your life and your work, and it has been a great experience.
Thank you very much
for
your interest.
And before I turn this off, I just have one very last question of a more technical nature. And that is, when you collect your papers, I'm sure you have collected your papers, including letters, etc. Where do they go? Where are they filed?
I have collected the papers, just bound them together.
But your personal papers, are they going to an archive?
Letters?
No. Letters also. You don't collect anything? No? You don't want to have them stored for posterity?
I don't know what for.
You don't know what for. They're not of scientific interest.
There are very few people who work on the same things. And I have the letters which I have collected, and there are very many. They are still useful for me, for my own use.
Yes.
I don't know.
And you haven't designated a place where they will go and will be stored for historians of chemistry to have access to?
No.
Well, then thank you very much, Professor Eichstein.